Ounsworth, reel 9.
These experiences at Ripon that you've been telling me about made you want to get back to France.
Yes, yes. Well, I volunteered for France to get away from there.
Yeah. What steps did you take at Ripon to get away?
Every week at the Standing Medical Board, when they asked me what was the matter with me, how was going on, I told them nothing. I was ready to go back to France.
Hmm.
So you started at category about 4B, and you're marked up, say, 4A and so until you get to about category 2. I was marked up one each week until I was in a high enough category to be discharged. And then I went down to Fort Fareham. I hadn't put my flags up because I thought, well, I wasn't in love with the idea of going over the top unarmed with the infantry, just to signal back information and being shot at and not being able to shoot back. So I thought, I'll stay as a gunner this time. So all went well for a short time until eventually one day they asked on parade, anyone know anything about motors and motorcycles? So I thought, oh, this is something. And I was keenly interested, so I stepped forward. And the next thing I knew, there were 5 of us who'd volunteered. We were sent down to some other place nearby to interview an officer from the Army Service Corps, MT, Mechanical Transport, which had just been formed. And they were wanting staff for that. So, I'll find out what's going on. So I lined up last man, you see, was before we marched in, but unfortunately, we didn't turn the same way. And I'm become number 1 instead of number 5. And there was a lieutenant colonel there, asked us what we knew, some elementary questions about internal combustion engines. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. Had I had a secondary school education? I said, yes. 2 of us out of the 5 had had secondary school education. So then we were blandly informed, without any asking us, that we were to be transferred to an OTC preparatory to taking up a commission in the Mechanical Transport Section of the Army Service Corps. The other 3 were able to be, you know, become mechanics. I said, well, this is a bit of a devil. Well, I could not afford to have a commission in those days. It was regarded as being the prerogative of people with money. So I thought, well, I'm not having that. And that was the only way to get out of this. When I got back during the dinner hour to my Fort Fareham, when I paraded at afternoon parade, I very ostentatiously paraded in the front rank with my crossed flags on. Because that was soon spotted. 2 paces stepped forward, and before he could bat an eyelid, I'm shoved off to the signal depot, you see.
Where was that?
Oh, first of all, I go to Abington Park.
That's what you've got down here, Abington Park.
Abington Park.
Mm.
Oh, that's right, yes. Mm. And but I'm only there a short time. But in that time, we have quite an interesting experience. I find several of the old battery already there, amongst whom is Sid Reynolds, the artificer, and 1 or 2 more, and it seems a short of a outside left in the battery football team. There's about 800 men in this. It is a 4th Reserve Heavy Battery. And there's about 800 odd men there, and they haven't got an outside left. So eventually I'm persuaded to chip in, you see, and I start playing football with them. I've no boots, but I soon find some. And there's a few horses arrive one day, and so I take charge of one of those, to my sorrow. They've been at Remount Depot weeks and weeks, everything, which they just go wild. And this mare was on heat, and she was absolutely vicious. Had a hell of a time with it. However, we come to a football match, and we do very well. There's one of these chaps who's in the hut. His name is Brown. He's a man of about 36 or 7, and I find out in conversation with him that he's a West End masseur in London. He's been drafted under the Derby scheme, you see, sort of the scraping the barrel by then, 1917. And he's a masseur. I thought, well, this is what we want for the football team. So he doesn't like horses. So, all right, I just have a word to him. I said, what about looking after the football team? He said, oh, I'd be delighted. So I got in touch with the officer, Major Jenkins, and, all right, this chap Brown is put in charge of all the physical part of it, you see. Well, finally, we enter a six-a-side tournament. The London Irish are promoting a big sports do, and amongst these there's a six-a-side football contest, you see. Well, of course, the accent is on speed there alone. So I'm playing on the left hand of the front three, you see. The centre forward is McEwen of Clyde. The football team we had there, by the way, 9 out of the 11 were English Scottish League pros, one of them international. And I've got a photograph there somewhere. So we win this tournament right through to the final. And then we got the prize giving. I'm rather amused because each man stepping up for his prize to be presented by the general's wife, as if he's drawing his pay, you know, saluting, 2 paces step forward and then 2 paces back in and salute again, whatever it is in hand. Well, Mac's our captain, so he steps forward and gets 6 10-shilling notes. And as soon as he got out of earshot, he let rip his effing and blanding about this. He works out how long he's played, 4 rounds at 10 minutes each way, and a semi-final and a final at 15 minutes each way, for 10 shillings. He thought he was playing for £3 a man, and it was £3 for the six of us. I was well satisfied. It was 2 weeks' wages for me, because I was only on 1 and 2 pence a day, out of which 3 and 6 pence allocations for the mother's allowance, you see. So I was getting about $1 a week, and I'd had an afternoon's football and got paid for it, and I was highly satisfied.
You passed on to Winnledown Signal Training School. Mm. Why was it necessary for you to go back to a training school? I mean, you were already a qualified signaller.
Search me. I went in there and had to go through all the lot again, and I played football there again. The officer was Mr. Blake, Lieutenant Blake, and he appealed every day for outside left. And on the last day of the week, I stood up. So I'm putting the team the following day. They haven't any proper size boots for me, they're too big. We play the Royal West Kents, I remember, and we won, but I've forgotten the score. So the following week, I'd sent home to Hull to my youngest uncle, father's youngest brother, who was a keen sportsman, and he got me a pair of boots with proper size and sent them down. So the following week, I played, and in my opinion, I had a good game. We won, I think, 3-0 or 3-1, something like that. And the full-back behind me was doing very nicely for me when he found I wanted the ball put in front for me to run it, because my only asset was speed. I had no ball control, but I could run. So he was shoving this ball well past the defence and me racing onto it, you see, and then dropping the centres in from right off the line. Mm. Did very well. So the following week, my name isn't on the team sheet. Funny. Anyhow, I went to see the match. Didn't say anything. Went to see the match, and the man in my place is his name is Downey, and so I'm talking to one of the chaps on the touchline. I watched this chap play. He's not as.
What interests me about Winnledown Signal Training School is whether the training that you went through there differed in any way from your original training. No.
This Downey had been on a fortnight's leave, and he was a Scottish international. They only wanted a man to replace him for a fortnight. Mm. No, the training was, differed in some respects. There was one or two later things had come in, you see.
What kind of things?
Fuller phone, maybe. That was a thing.
You mentioned the fuller phone earlier in France, so that must have been the same.
No, we didn't have the full of horn, not on the first, but the first trip in France, I don't think. It was in the second trip. Mm. But however, I passed out there with, I'd only one error in the whole of the season. That was when the chap was reading out. I was standing with the flag, you see. And he was a Geordie, and A and E sound very similar in Geordie language, and I sent the wrong letter, because I didn't know until afterwards. And I said, I knew then, he'd sent it. But however, the written examinations on the telephone and all that sort of thing, you know. And we were in a big hut for that, and there was an examining officer come from another unit, you see, and two other officers walking around. Well, I've filled in all the questions. There's 11 questions, and I've filled them all in on both papers in about 20 minutes. And he came round to me and says, get on with it. He said, I've finished. So he took him up to the examining officer, and he came back and he said, well, I'm only supposed to answer 9 out of the 11. And so I'll strike out 2. And so I said, well, strike out what you like. And so anyhow, he turned me out then.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed out with the highest marks that had ever been attained in that school.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing was, the first day I was on parade, was a little sergeant pulled me out. I got my flags up, you see. He pulled me out. And then when I was brought up before the old man, the charge was wearing the flags.
Yeah.
Before I'd passed out, you see. And I said, well, I passed out 2 years ago.
Now, you returned to France in, let me see, May 1917. So you'd been away about 8 or 9 months.
Mm.
And you joined the 144th Heavy Battery.
Mm.
Was the 144th an identical kind of battery to the 4th Heavy?
The 4th...
After you returned to France, you went to Le Havre.
Mm.
Mutinies seemed to follow you around a bit.
Oh.
What was the one at Le Havre prompted by?
By the conditions on this bullring, the appalling things you're supposed to do. I mean, you'd have to be trained athletes to do some of those activities.
Well, tell me what the bullring was and what the exercises were.
It was a course. You'd go around it, climbing over obstacles, jumping, and one of the jumps was off a raised part. You had to jump across a water jump, and I could just about do it. But mind you, I could jump. In that camp at Ripon, we're doing it there. Mm. And I jumped 18 feet in the hut, beat even the instructor. It's been a fellow called Horn from Devon, and he wasn't pleased about it either. The two of us both beat him. But lots of these older men, they fell in the water. That was to the great glee of these instructors.
Did you have to go through this course yourself?
Yes, yes. Everybody had to go there. Every morning you were up there. It was absolutely, it was like a penance sort of thing. And that's what the row was about. Some of them refused to do it.
How did the row develop? Did you hear
about
it?
No, they just refused to do it. That's all. They turned out, I think it was either the Scottish or the South Africans refused, and they turned out the others to sort of intimidate them, and they joined them. But what happened, I don't know. We didn't get to know that, by the way.
Now, you rejoined the 144th Heavy Battery. Mm. Was that battery different in any ways from the 2nd Heavy? Had anything changed?
They were not as well trained, because they were not formed until a year after the other, you see. And they didn't get anything like the period of time in which to do the training. So, when I got there, and it took a bit of getting there too, we got up to Bayeul during the early hours of the morning, and this was the day of the Battle of Messines started. It was about about a week into June, something like that, on the 6th or 7th or 8th of June, something like that it would be. And there was guards there, and me and another lad were taken to this brigade headquarters in the early hours of the morning, and we were informed that this battery, the 144 that we were destined for, had been transferred to another brigade at 6 o'clock the evening before. This is preparatory to the Battle of Messines, eventually. And so they wouldn't have anything to do with us. Well, the guard had done his job, he'd taken us where he was told to do, and that was it, so we were left loose. And in the early morning, suddenly all hell broke loose. I mean, all guns going, and these mines went up, you see. This lad hadn't been out before. It frightened me, the racket that was going on. Well, we wandered about all day trying to find this battery.
This was during the course of the battle itself?
During the course of the battle, all the time. Yes, there wasn't a lot of stuff coming back, not that I could see. But there was plenty going out. And we went back to this brigade, a brigade headquarters that we'd been to once before. I've forgotten which one it was. Where this battery was supposed to have gone to, you see, but they didn't know where they were. And while we were there, this was in the evening, Sergeant Wynne, as it turned out to be, from the battery we were destined for, he arrived, and this other sergeant said, "There's two recruits here for you," and so he took us back. And they were at a place called Dranoutre, Dranoutre. And we handed over to the pay corporal, Baxter, and he put us in his... He had a tent. We put us in there for a time, and this other lad, Thomas, was dead beat. So, because we'd been 2 days and a night in the train. So, just then I had a order yell out for numbers one. That's the sergeant's on each gun, you see, the number one. And so this Thomas is just beginning to unpack his kit. I says, "Hold on a minute." I says, "Nothing." Shouting for numbers one for nothing. A few minutes later, the order comes out. You hear him shouting, "A subsection hook in, B subsection hook in," you know, that sort of thing. And we're on the march again. Didn't know where we were going. So anyhow, we got well up front. Walked, kept dropping back and dropping back and dropping back until finally we're behind the water cart, which brings up the rear, because a six-gun battery on line of march takes up about half a mile of road. All that. And the captain is riding behind, always. The major rides in front, the captain behind. And it's beginning to get... towards dawn then. So he rode up and he said, by then I was carrying this little kid's kit. I didn't know then, he was 28, he was at the Bantams Battalion as well, but they were transferring signals from the infantry to the artillery to replace the heavy losses in signals that we were incurring, you see, through line mending on long lines. And